It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson has covered six presidential elections. She was White House correspondent for NPR during the Clinton administration. She's been watching politics in Washington since way back in 1989. Her reports, we know, can be heard regularly on NPR's All Things Considered and Morning Edition. She also serves as a panelist on the Fox News Sunday Weekly Public Affairs program. And next Thursday, Mara Liasson will be in Iowa to speak at the Carrie Chapman Katz Center for Women in Politics at Iowa State University. She's giving a presentation in the evening titled, What Just Happened? The 2014 Elections and Beyond. Mara Liasson joins us for this half of the program. Hello, Mara. Welcome.
Happy to be here.
Start off by giving us, in a nutshell, what you hope to be talking about when you come to ISU. What did happen on Tuesday?
Well, that's what everybody's trying to figure out. I mean, the easy answer is, of course, Republicans won big. It was a wave election, which means the definition of that is that all the close races, or almost all of them, break in one direction. And in this case, they did. They broke to the Republicans. It was a very late developing wave, but the Democrats lost in a lot of places they'd hoped to hang on. And there are some red states where they knew they were going to lose, places like Louisiana and Arkansas, Alaska. But they'd really hoped to hang on in the presidential battleground states, places where Obama had won before, like Iowa, Colorado, North Carolina, New Hampshire. And they ended up winning New Hampshire, but losing North Carolina, Colorado, and Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And almost losing Virginia. Mark Warner had a near-death experience there.
Let's talk about Iowa. Iowa made history, electing its very first female member of Congress in history, Joni Ernst. Let's use that as an opportunity to talk about her campaign and a little bit about gender and politics, your observations there. What do you think made Joni Ernst such a successful candidate?
Well, I think Joni Ernst was successful for a lot of reasons. First of all, she ran a really good campaign. She did some creative things. Of course, the squeal ad will go down in the greatest hits of 2014 ad reel. And also, she had a very appealing package of qualities, you know, mom, soldier, conservative. And she didn't win among women. She won among men, so she performed as a typical Republican candidate in terms of the gender gap. But she also ran against a Democrat who made a lot of mistakes. And Bruce Braley, who was considered to be the next senator from Iowa for a decade, didn't live up to his billing. And I think the mistake he made talking privately about Chuck Grassley really did haunt him. And he never ran the kind of campaign that people expected.
Mm-hmm. What role, if any, did Joni Ernst's gender play in her appeal?
You know, that is a really good question, and I think it's hard to determine that. I think it definitely helped her. It was a way for her to have a kind of appeal that a male Republican might not have had. She didn't run on typical women's issues, but she certainly made it harder for the Democrats to run the classic war on women attacks that they've run on Republicans around the country. Now, that being said, other Republicans who were male Republicans also were able to blunt those attacks, but I do think that Joni Ernst's gender helped her.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think, if I do this sort of mental exercise, if you do it with me, what if, and you mentioned the Make 'em Squeal ad that will go down as one of the best hits of political ads in 2014, what if that had been a man talking about growing up castrating pigs? Or does it
a man could not have run that ad. A man could not have run that ad. They would have made him. I think that if a man had run that ad, Democrats would have made him into a Todd Akin caricature. Only a woman could have done that. Only a woman could have driven up on a motorcycle and, you know, taken off her helmet and shot at the shooting range like she did in another ad when she shot up Obamacare. These were all things. These ads were lighthearted. But they did use her gender in a creative way, in an appealing way.
We've heard the Make 'em Squeal ad, but the other one you mentioned came after that, the motorcycle ad. I think it's called
right.
Give Me a Shot. Let's listen to the audio from that you referenced. She's pulling up to a shooting range on a Harley Davidson, clad in a black leather jacket, and she takes out a pistol and shoots a target here. Let's listen to the audio from that 30-second ad.
She's not your typical candidate. Conservative Joni Ernst, mom, farm girl, and a lieutenant colonel who carries more than just lipstick in her purse. Joni Ernst will take aim at wasteful spending. And once she sets her sights on Obamacare, Joni's gonna unload. Oh, and one more thing. Joni doesn't miss much.
Give me a shot. I'm Joni Ernst, and I approve this message.
So when we look at that through the lens of gender and politics, a lot of things going on there, Mara. Lipstick, purse, a Harley,
guns. Oh, yeah,
guns.
It's just great. And, you know, the thing about it is that there's not any scary music. It's lighthearted. It's clever and funny. You know, it's not your typical attack ad.
Mm-hmm. Now, days before
even though she's literally attacking Obamacare.
Right, and she's got a pistol. Days before the election, Mara Liasson, the retiring senator, this seat is all about this open seat, Senator Tom Harkin retiring after three decades in office. Now, a few days before the election, he said in public remarks that Joni Ernst, something to the effect that she wasn't fit to be Iowa's next senator just because she's, in his words, really attractive and she sounds nice. And to quote him, "I don't care if she's as good-looking as Taylor Swift or as nice as Mr. Rogers, but if she votes like Michelle Bachmann, she's wrong for the state of Iowa." Now, Tom Harkin had to apologize for that. He apologized. Here's what Joni Ernst said to Fox News.
"I was very offended that Senator Harkin would say that. I think it's unfortunate that he and many of their party believe that you can't be a real woman if you're conservative and you're female. If my name had been John Ernst attached to my resume, Senator Harkin would not have said those things."
Mara Liasson, do you think that's true?
Well, yeah, I think that he wouldn't have said something about John Ernst's looks. He still would have attacked him for being too conservative. But this shows you that it's difficult to attack female candidates, and it's a minefield. And Senator Harkin is not the first politician who's gotten in trouble trying to attack a female candidate. It's generally a good idea to steer clear of commenting on a female candidate's looks. In mm-hmm. general,
we can. Are you saying that we can get away with making remarks about looks about men? We had
but people don't make remarks about looks about men. So
well,
I don't
what
think
about
of getting away with it? I don't think I've ever heard anybody talk about whether a man is good looking or not.
What about President Obama, Senator Obama, on a beach in Hawaii, or John Edwards and the vanity over his pretty hair? Aren't those examples?
Well, that's a little bit different. First of all, the picture of President Obama in Hawaii. He didn't want the press there at all. That's a little bit different. I think that as a candidate, John Edwards example is a little more irrelevant because he was a candidate. And in general, or the particular incident that I remember from that race is when he was getting his hair fixed for a television appearance,
yes.
And somehow or other that tape got revealed. That was about John Edwards' vanity. That wasn't another candidate commenting on whether he was good-looking or not.
Mm-hmm. Let's take the slogan you mentioned here. You said mother, soldier, and conservative, I think, for Joni Ernst. I think I saw on a yard sign Joni Ernst, mother, soldier, leader. So we have in that first word, mother. I'm wondering, when we talk about gender in politics, if something has changed. Now motherhood is a big selling point, so much so that you
absolutely.
Put it...
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I actually did a story on this early on in the campaigns. Everybody put their mother in a commercial, and their daughters, and their wives, especially Republicans who were trying to find a new way to communicate with female voters because they have been on the losing end of the gender gap for years. And everyone put their mothers in an ad. And in Michigan, even though Terry Lynn Land didn't win as the Republican candidate, she said, you know, how can my opponent say that my policies are bad for women? I know a thing or two about women. You know, it's just, I think being a woman now is actually a plus. And everybody wants to appeal to women because women are 53% of the electorate. And Joni Ernst did pretty well.
Another candidate in Iowa, another female candidate who didn't win her race in the 3rd District, Iowa's 3rd District, Stacey Apple. Let's listen to an ad that she put out on this campaign that also uses motherhood.
"I've got 6 children, ages 5 to 17. And take it from me, I've learned how to solve problems. It's a skill I'll put to work for you in Congress."
So there we have it again. Mothers solve problems. They have all these kinds of competing interests in a household, and that's like the government?
Yes, yes, that's the idea. I'll tell you something. It's no guarantee you're going to win, but I think that we'll be seeing a lot of pictures of little Clinton grandchild in the next campaign for the same reasons.
Mm-hmm. To finish up this conversation on gender and politics, Mara, another thing that was noticed is that, is it true that women are much more likely than men to campaign by stressing their first names? Joni Ernst, the signs had Joni huge, the Ernst less pronounced. We see that with Hillary Clinton. What's going on there? Is that gender?
That's a good question, and I haven't actually thought about it. There are people who come to prominence, and they are known by their first names. I don't know if women do it any better, any more than men do.
Can you think of any men who've gone out with just their first names?
I'm trying to think about that. Well, let's see. Mary Landrieu, I don't think she ever really ran as her for Kay Hagan. I think she used her whole name, Jean Shaheen. I don't know. It's. I think it. First of all, it humanizes the candidate. Makes them seem very familiar. But you have to have a certain amount of charisma and star power, I think, to get away with being named one name like Cher or Bono or Hillary or Joni.
Maybe because Joni and Hillary are rather unusual names.
Yes, that's also could be it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the gender gap in voting. In every presidential election year from 1980 to 2008, women have outnumbered men in voting Democratic, up to the president, as a matter of fact. The same is true for men outnumbering women voting Republican. What explains this difference in partisanship between male and female voters, the gender gap?
Well, you know, what's interesting about the 2012 election is, of course, Barack Obama won the women's vote. He benefited from the gender gap. He won by about 11 points. But Mitt Romney won the married women's vote by 7 points, and Barack Obama won the single women's vote by 29 points. So it's really single women who have become the most reliable supporters for Democrats. They are more likely to approve of the Democrats' economic policies. Single women often work for the minimum wage. They're happy to see it raised. They rely on government programs more, and they also agree with the Democrats on social issues. Married women, not so much. But I think that this has been a very, very durable feature of elections, and the Republicans are trying to make inroads with the women's vote. And you could argue that this cycle, they made some improvements. In 2010 and 2012, a lot of Republican Senate candidates lost states that they should have won because they insulted women voters. And this year, they worked very hard not to do that. You saw a lot of candidates coming out for over-the-counter birth control. They disavowed their support of so-called personhood amendments. And they really did try to talk to women in a different way. But the gender gap has been around for a long time. Women feel the Democratic Party is more on their side.
Mm-hmm. We see it, the timing of this emergence, we see it emerging around 1980, and it emerges at the same time when we start to see the disappearance of more moderate lawmakers in Congress, don't we? When that begins to where we are today, where we have the middle having pretty much disappeared. Do you see a connection?
Between the gender gap and the middle disappearing?
Well, yeah, because they coincide in time.
I haven't really thought about that. I mean, the middle has certainly disappeared. I think the gender gap probably started a little bit earlier than we saw, large numbers of moderate candidates from both parties being defeated. But that's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm. Mara Liasson with us, NPR national political correspondent. Let's talk about the conservative wave that we saw in this 2014 election. Is this election, the result, simply, Mara, the pendulum swinging to the right before it swings to the left again? Or is there something, in your view, larger going on with the conservative movement?
That is a great question. A lot of people are thinking about that right now. We simply don't know. Sometimes a midterm election is a kind of dress rehearsal for the next presidential election. In 2006, the Democrats took over the House, and then in 2008, they won the White House. That's mm-hmm. certainly what the Republicans hope happened now, but I don't think that's what's happening now. I think that the fact that the Republicans did not campaign on a governing agenda, they're not claiming a mandate for this win, even though it's a very big, decisive win, tells you that they understand that the next election is going to be wide open and that neither party right now has an advantage.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think the GOP has to do to keep both houses in its control?
Well, what the GOP has to do, I think the House is going to be much easier for them because the way district lines are drawn, I think their majority is pretty durable, and it'll certainly last probably till 2020 when the next census redraws districts. But in terms of the Senate, they are going to have a tougher time next time. It'll be a presidential year, 2016. They have a lot of Republican senators from blue states, just like the Democrats had a lot of Democratic senators, incumbents in red states this time. Republicans have even more of their incumbents in blue states up for re-election in 2016, and it'll be a presidential year where more Democrats come out and vote. So they, in order to hang on to their majority, they have to protect people like Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire and Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania and Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. They're going to have to figure out how to hang on to those seats. It's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. But the Republican Party has some long-term demographic issues it has to resolve. It has to figure out how to win more Hispanic votes. Now, it does tend to win more Hispanic votes in midterms, but not in presidential years. Mitt Romney lost the Hispanic vote 71-27. Has to do better with women, young people. All the fastest-growing parts of the electorate, minorities, young people, single women, have supported Democrats by large majorities.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Hispanic voters. Immigration, will that be in some form something that this new Congress and the president can agree on?
That's a really good question. There's been a lot of argument about it. As soon as the polls closed, Republicans were warning the president, do not issue executive orders on immigration. Mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell called it a red flag in front of a bull. John Boehner says it'll poison the well. If you do that, you'll never get immigration reform legislation through Congress. The president says, look, I waited a very long time. The Senate passed a bipartisan bill. The House wouldn't take it up. And I have to move on this. So what's really interesting is we believe he will move on this. He will issue these orders by the end of the year because he said he would. He delayed once. He waited till after the election. How sweeping will they be? How many people will they legalize temporarily? And don't forget, anything he does is only good till he's out of office. So how sweeping will it be, and what will be the Republican reaction? Will they say, we want to impeach you because you did this? Because you issued executive orders, we won't pass any legislation. That would be just self-defeating, since many Republicans think that they need to pass immigration reform in order to appeal to Hispanic voters. So that, I think, will be one of the great dramas of the remaining weeks of 2014.
Mm-hmm. Other dramas you think are likely to play out, other issues in the remainder of this year or the beginning of the new Congress?
I think that will be the big one. One thing that we're not going to see, which I think is a good thing for the country, is that the Republican leadership has made it very clear there are not going to be any government shutdowns. There's not going to be any defaults on the debt. Those kind of cliffhangers are off the table.
Mm-hmm. Turnout in Iowa is slightly down in this midterm election from the 2010 election. I wonder if you think in Iowa or across the country if a good number of the people who are disenfranchised, I think our turnout was something around 52-53%, are thinking their vote doesn't matter also because of the increasing amounts of money in these campaigns, big money. In the Ernst Braley campaign, some $80 million spent. And I know it wasn't the most expensive Senate campaign either in the country.
Well, if people think their vote doesn't count because a lot of money is spent, I think they're mistaken. A lot of money is spent, and a lot of people feel strongly about that, but that's not a reason not to vote. You did see this was a low turnout election. People were disgusted by the attack ads. That tends to make people stay home. In many states, there weren't competitive races. That also leads to a low turnout election. But we have been seeing some relatively high turnout presidential elections, so that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. And both parties just have to figure out how to get more people to vote in the midterms.
Mara, you're coming to Iowa. Iowans Maggie Tinsman, a Republican, and Jean Lloyd Jones, a Democrat, belong to different parties, but they shared a conviction that our political system would be improved if at least one-third of its leaders were female. So back in 2010, they brought together a group of like-minded women, and they adopted a 10-year plan to reach political equity in Iowa by 2020. in time to celebrate the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage in this country. It's called 50-50 in 2020. I wonder, what do you see as the biggest challenges to getting more women in elected office?
Well, I think that the biggest challenges are just getting women to run. I mean, women have families. It's hard. It's very, very demanding. And the more women who run for local elections, school board, county commissioner, whatever it is, the more women in the pipeline means the more we're going to have in office. So I think that's just the answer.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and a lot of women, of course, aren't as nakedly ambitious as men. They question whether they're ready. Generally, men don't question that kind of thing at all.
Mm. How would our politics, do you think, change if there were more women in office? More cooperation, less confrontation? That would be
sort of...
Well,
that's a really good question, and I don't know the answer to it. There's certainly a lot of people who think that if more women were in office, we would have a more collegial, less combative political scene. I'm just not sure about that.
Mm-hmm. Mara, as I mentioned at the beginning, you serve as a panelist also on Fox News Sunday, the weekly public affairs program on that network. And according to the NPR ombudsman, this is a regular issue that some NPR listeners object to your second role as a contributor to Fox News. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well, I respond to just to say you can listen to me in both places, and I think you will find that I don't say anything different on Fox than I say on NPR. And the ombudsman at NPR has done an exhaustive review of this issue, and I would refer anybody to that review.
Mm-hmm. What's your
which
view?
Which is public, I think. It still should be on the website.
Yes, it's certainly on the NPR website. What's your view on we know that our media has become partisan, with certain outlets catering to conservatives and more others catering more to liberal views. Is that good for democracy?
Well, I don't think it's bad. It's also just a fact of life. I mean, once you had the cable revolution and there was room for lots and lots and lots of networks, there were going to be networks that catered to people with different views. But, you know, the joke is that Fox and MSNBC don't even cover the same natural disasters. So the media is polarized. I guess I think I'm the exception that proves the rule because I'm on Fox and NPR. But I think that there is a very important place for down-the-middle, straight analysis news organizations. And the other thing to remember, inside a lot of these networks, there are shows that are more partisan than others. You know, the panels that I appear on Fox, to me, are similar to panels on any other program,
mm-hmm.
any other network.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Mara Liasson, NPR national political correspondent. You'll be coming to Iowa next Thursday to speak at the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics, Iowa State University, giving a presentation titled What's Just Happened, the 2014 Elections and Beyond. Mara, thank you for this conversation.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Coming up in just a moment after a short break on River to River, we'll remember fallen soldiers, also Iowa State University graduates. That when we come back, it's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. We'll